Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest today is Larry Pinkney. Larry's a dedicated activist. He's a former political prisoner. He's a Black Panther Party veteran. He formerly served as Republic of New Africa Minister of Interior. He's currently a Black commentator, editorial board member. Larry, it's great to have you on. There's so much we want to get into. We certainly want to talk about Lynn Stewart. I'm not certain what's heavily on your mind, what you're writing about, what you're thinking about. There's so much. My God, we could spend the whole weekend talking about it. But first of all, let me just say, Larry, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a delight, a pleasure, an honor. It really, really is, Steve. Thank you very, very much. I'm glad to be a part of the show today.
Oh, Larry, it's a great honor for me to have you on. You've been through so much yourself. I write about this stuff. You lived it. You lived what I only wrote about, and I continue to write about it. And I know in my mind, and I've said it, and I think I'm sure I've written it a few times, that no matter how much we address these types of terrible abuses against innocent people here in America and across the world, crimes against humanity committed by our government against innocent people, Larry, like you. Nobody can understand them unless they go through them yourself.
Yes. And the fact is that all of us, and I repeat very emphatically, Steve, that all of us are really targets. All of us, especially those of us who are unconscious, we must become conscious of the reality that we're in, because once we become conscious of it, then we can address it. But otherwise, it's like Malcolm X said, it's like having Novocaine shot into your mouth, and it numbs us to the reality of the horrors that are being done to all of us in this country and throughout Mother Earth collectively.
Oh, it really is, Larry, and that's a good way of putting it. People get distracted here. I understand that people have family obligations, they have work obligations. All of these things are important. We all go through those things. At the same time, to be oblivious or not take the trouble to find out enough about the harm that our own government does to us, that touches our lives so harmfully, to ignore that is literally to ignore our own welfare. And I stress it on this program, Larry. I do it in interviews that I give. I do it in my writing. And I say very, very emphatically, if we don't look out for our own welfare, who's going to do it for us? If we expect the politicians in Washington to do it, we're dreaming. If we throw our bums, the only thing we're going to get are new bums. It doesn't matter who they are. It doesn't matter if they're Republicans or Democrats. There's an embedded power structure, Larry. You know that. And the names and faces change, but the policies stay the same.
That's right. And the only way any kind of policy is to be changed, and it must be changed, is that we the people, everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, collectively, united, we must do this. That is the only way that these despicable policies will be changed. I just wrote an article in Intrepid Report entitled The United States of Subterfuge, i.e., you know, stealth, sneakiness, underhandedness. And as you so eloquently put it, Steve, you're absolutely right on it when you say that it really doesn't matter whether it's Democrat or Republican, because it does not. And I'm going to take it a step further. It doesn't matter whether it's black, white, or whatever, because if the interests of the people every day, I'm talking about everyday ordinary people, those of us who are struggling just to survive, if those interests are not at heart, and they are not, if they are not what's at heart, then nothing of any substance will be changed. So I concur with you. And one of the things I definitely hope we will address, I know our time is short, is the deplorable situation facing Lynn Portia Stewart, our dear sister who's incarcerated.
Well, that's a good segue to talk about Lynn. She absolutely is a political prisoner. Larry, I've written about many dozens of political prisoners. in U.S. prisons. Innocent people framed. They did absolutely nothing. In most cases, it's Muslim Americans or Black Americans or Latino Americans, and occasionally it's a lawyer like Lynn. And Lynn's crime was spending 30 years being a powerful human rights lawyer. She defended people who never would have had a legitimate advocate, someone who really stood up for them in their hour of need if they didn't have somebody like Lynn. She did it because it's the right thing to do. And they targeted her especially for one client, but it really wasn't one client, Larry. It was 30 years of this kind of heroic work in the courtroom, vindicating people that the government wanted to convict. That's a no-no. So I'm sure she was on a target list for a long time. You know, we don't have our hands on the documents that single out the people they want to give, but I'm sure they were watching Lynn and looking for a way to get her, and they finally found a good way to do it when she defended the so-called blind sheikh, the guy who was wrongly accused of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing that did a lot of damage, didn't bring the towers down, but did damage, killed people. This individual had absolutely nothing to do with it. He was framed. He's serving life in prison. And Lynn was part of former Attorney General Ramsey Clark's defense team. Ramsey Clark, probably the only decent Attorney General this country ever had, mm-hmm. Larry. It's hard to imagine that someone like Ramsey could have become an Attorney General under Lyndon Johnson. I guess he's in his 80s now. He's still very much active. And yeah. I mean, just an extraordinary guy who tells it the way he really needs to be told. And Lynn was part of his team. He wasn't targeted. They both basically did the same thing. They wouldn't dare go after him, I guess. They went after Lynn. She was initially sentenced to 28 months. She shouldn't have gotten 28 seconds. There never should have been a trial or any charges. But all this happened, and then her appeal was turned down. Right-wing judges on the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, was it?
Yes, it was.
Not only turned it down, as you know, Larry, but extremely angry that the lower court judge, the district court judge, only gave her 28 months. And they literally ordered this guy to up the sentence. He gave her 10 years, which is a virtual death sentence unless she can get out.
That's right. And we need to understand, and I always try to reiterate and emphasize this fact, is that what is being done to Lynn Stewart is in reality being done to all of us in very insidious ways. The message was and is by this fascist, and I'm calling it like it is, de facto fascist. Let's stop playing games, as Harry Belafonte said just the other day. Fascism is fascism, by whatever name. The reality is that people are being targeted, such as Lynn Stewart, as a message really to all of us, and most especially any who might dare, and in this case, any lawyer or attorney who might dare stand up and do the constitutionally required vigorous job of defending their client. This is the message. Well, it's also a message to everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, because what it is saying is, if you dare to dissent, if you dare to seek to expose, you know, what we are doing, you will have a very heavy price to pay. And you're correct when you say, Steve, that in fact the descendants, it should never have been any sentence whatsoever. As you said, it shouldn't have been 28 seconds, much less 28 months. But then, to add insult to injury, for them to actually extend this to 10 years is beyond absurdity. It's beyond the theater of absurd. This is absolutely unacceptable, and we all, I don't care what our color is, I don't care what our gender is, we had all better understand that this is a message to us, and we must reject that message. We must not only reject the message, Steve. We must reverse the message. We must send our own message, as you said so eloquently in one of the many, many articles that you have written about Lynn Stewart as well as other U.S. political prisoners. But as you said, it requires activism. It requires action. It requires people to get out their posteriors and do something. Sign a petition, organize, agitate, educate, so that we understand what the game plan is. We are not helpless. We are not helpless. That's why we've thus far been successful in having thousands upon thousands of signers of the petition for the compassionate release of Lynn Stewart, a 73-year-old woman who is just amazing. Just an amazing human being, first and foremost. And we have the obligation to support her totally, completely, without reservation.
Well, I certainly agree, Larry. And the key thing about Lynn, aside from the fact that they should build a statue to her and honor her, is that she's 73 years old. She is a cancer survivor. It was in remission. It came back. She's getting deplorable medical care. Recently, her white blood cells took a dangerous drop. If you're in prison, nobody gets good health care in prison. My God, so many millions of Americans don't get good health care if they're out of prison. But if you're in prison, you absolutely don't get it, no matter who you are. And if you're a political prisoner like Lynn, and I wrote an article that I used the title, Obama Wants Lynn Stewart Dead. I just have no doubt about that, Larry. Obama wants her. They don't want to have her get out. They wanted her to have a long sentence, long enough so that she will deteriorate so badly, she'll expire, she'll die. And if she doesn't get out and get decent care, which she can get, her cancer reached stage 4. It's a dangerous stage, but it's treatable. But it's, at the same time, because the care she's gotten has been so deplorable, it's spreading. And if it isn't treated properly, and if it isn't done soon, she's going to die.
That's right. That's right. And, Steve, this is by design. This is not by osmosis or coincidence. This is by government design. And this is what we, everyday, ordinary people, need to understand. These things are being perpetuated. They are being perpetrated and carried out by design. Now, we have to, as everyday, ordinary people, understand that it is our responsibility, our duty, our obligation to ourselves, to each other collectively, and frankly, to Mother Earth, to stop this, to turn it around, to expose it, and to stop it. We are in a very, very dangerous place historically right now in this nation. Very dangerous. And let me be blunt about Barack Obama. I call him fascism in blackface. Again, fascism in blackface. People have been, were duped into thinking that, oh, well, we've got someone here who really cares about us, when a little research would have shown that, in fact, Obama is beholden to the same corporate. Okay, the same, he's beholden to the same corporate, I'm trying to not curse, so let me just say, beholden to the same corporate swine that his predecessor, George W. Bush, and his predecessors, were beholden to. We need to understand that. We need to understand that this phony, fake Democrat Republican paradigm, this model that has been thrust into the faces of the people of this country, is fallacious. It is a fallacious model. It is time to build and to create a new woman, a new man, a new people for a world where people are first and foremost dealt with based upon their needs, their human needs, not human greed. So I tend to get very, very emphatic, and please excuse me, but especially when I'm thinking of Lynn Stewart, when I'm thinking of Leonard Peltier, when I'm thinking of Mumia Abdul-Jamal, when I'm thinking of, dozens and dozens, if not thousands, but dozens at least that I know of U.S. political prisoners who are in a gulag, barbaric, sadistic prison system. But so are all of us to a lesser degree because we have allowed our minds to be closed down. We have allowed our minds, we've allowed ourselves to be put into a catatonic state. This is not acceptable. I say this to my brothers and sisters. This is not acceptable. And I want to say one additional thing, if I may, Steve. I know I'm going on, but I want to say one additional thing. The counterintelligence program, which was a program, is a program that was set up to discredit, to frame, to imprison, and in many cases, to murder political activists. And by the way, that's political activists of all colors, okay? And this was done by the United States government. COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program, is still functioning. It never stopped. It never came to an end. Whether one understands it as being codified in the Patriot Act or codified in the NDAA or codified in drone man Barack Obama's kill list, it never stopped. And what this country does to people all over the world, in Africa, Asia, the so-called Middle East, and yes, in Europe as well, all over the world, is precisely what will come home, as Malcolm X said, the chickens coming home to roost. First it was drones over there, now it's drones over here. And we need to understand that Lynn Stewart brings all of these things together. All of these things together. This sister has for almost 40 years fought the good fight. She stood for everyday ordinary people. So, of course, as you so you put it so well, yes, she was targeted, as so many of us have been. But you know what? We are the people. We are in the overwhelming majority, and it is high time that we recognize that, overcome our differences, unite, and create a better, more just and humane society and world.
Larry, a big amen to that. By the way, you take all the time you want. I'm very delighted to listen to your passion. It inspires me to hear it. I think there are so many examples of what I see coming. What happened in Boston after what I call a false flag with two brothers literally set up and became innocent patsies. I believe that very strongly. But what happened in Boston for a short period of time when the city was locked down and thousands of police and FBI and special SWAT teams and whatever just locked down a large area of Boston and greater Boston. I grew up in Boston, Larry. I know exactly where the incident took place in the community. I lived in one Boston community and one suburban community in my years there until the mid-1950s when I finished college and left. But I just can't imagine that anything like that could happen, where literally you'd see police all over the place and they could knock on your door and they could demand that you open it up because they want to search it. And if you say, do you have a warrant? I mean, they probably would just break it down and come in. I mean, this is martial law. This is suspension of the Constitution. If it can happen in Boston for a couple of days, it can happen anywhere. It can be happening on a permanent basis. And this is what the future looks like. If you want to know what it looks like, think about what happened in Boston. I think it's going to come anywhere, Larry.
Yes, you are absolutely correct. And the fact of the matter is, you know, I've had the opportunity to look at footage from different places throughout Boston, Steve, and I have seen with my own eyes where SWAT teams went into people's homes, all this corporate stream nonsense about, oh, the people were so willing. No, it wasn't about that. The people said, what are you doing? How dare you? But the SWAT teams went into these people's homes, and by the way, it was of all colors. Okay, they went into their homes. I saw this in a number of different clips of footage where they went into their homes, made men, women, children, put their hands on their heads and come out of their houses. You are absolutely correct, my brother. If we do not do something about this now, that is precisely what the future of this country, of this nation, looks like, and we must not allow that to happen. Boston clearly, unequivocally, was a false flag. It was a false flag, and the United States government is doing this repeatedly. Entrapment is the order of the day. It reminds me of the Reichstag in Germany in 1930s, and people say, well, don't go there. No, I won't go there. It's worse here. Far worse, because we're talking about far more people. We're talking about not just millions of people in this country, but billions of people who are being directly affected all over the world. We've got to put a stop to this. We've got to do it now.
Larry, we sure do. There's a book that I've mentioned a few times in my articles by Bertram Gross. He wrote it in the 1980s, and the title was Friendly Fascism, and he talked about fascism coming to America wrapped in an American flag. In other words, deceiving people, Larry. You know, you're a smiling face, whether it's Ronald Reagan, whether it's Obama, whoever it might be, but it's the same ugly system. It can happen on a local area like Boston, or it can happen on a broad area. Because of what I do, I once asked Francis Boyle, distinguished human rights lawyer, teaches downstate from me at the University of Illinois, I was concerned about what do I do if the FBI wants to come and question me or approaches me in any way. And he said, well, if they come and they knock on your door, ask if they have a warrant. And then he said to me, if they have a gun, do anything they ask, which goes back to what you say, police or SWAT teams, approach a household, demand the door be open, or whatever they do. And, I mean, they have guns, and there are many of them there. I mean, you wouldn't dare challenge them. I mean, they could shoot you and claim, well, this guy pulled a gun on me.
Mm-hmm. And they will. This is the same old game. And the reason that the game is old is because it has proven to be effective. But we ordinary people, everyday ordinary people, we can break that effectiveness. We can break that cycle. And the fact is, the U.S. Constitution has been made null and void by this so-called constitutional lawyer, Barack Obama, drone man, NDAA signer, etc., Mr. Kill List. It has been made null and void in a very real sense. Not to mention international law has also been made null and void. We, the people in this country, must unite. We must wake up, not just ourselves, but our brothers, our sisters, our friends, okay? Yes, even our enemies. Wake them up. They must understand that we are involved, we are engaged in a collective struggle where our very survival is at stake, economically, politically, socially, and my brother Steve, quite physically.
Well, that's right, Larry, and it bears repeating. Obama taught constitutional law at the University of Chicago. He went to Harvard Law School. He's no dummy. He knows the law. Here's a guy who knows the law and violates it in such a blatant way. There's one other law professor that I remember before my time, back in 1915, the 1920s or so, Woodrow Wilson. Well, he gave us the Federal Reserve Act, which handed the U.S. money system over to Wall Street. He also gave us World War One, and my dad, Larry, was in World War One in France. Thankfully, he came back. You and I wouldn't be speaking right now. But law professors know the law. Wilson shouldn't have done what he did. He later apologized, but apologies after the fact don't matter. Just like Colin Powell, after lying, about Saddam's weapons of mass destruction. I wrote an article about it in the context of leading up to a war on Syria, full-scale war. There's a war going on in Syria right now, and it's America's war. But a full-scale full-scale intervention looms, and I can feel it, I can taste it, I can smell it. And I went back and I quoted from Powell's speech before the UN Security Council, where chapter and verse he claimed Saddam had this, that, and everything else. It was a bald-faced lie. And months later, he still stuck by his story. But a few years later, he admitted, I forget his language, but I quoted him. It's been a while, and I don't remember his words. But he basically admitted he got it wrong. What he was really saying without saying it was he lied. He lied.
Yeah.
He claimed that Iraq had stuff it absolutely didn't have. And the U.S. media lied, because in the mid-1990s, Larry, and this was in my article, Saddam's son-in-law defected to the West. Kamal Hussein was his name. He was in charge of Saddam's weapons program. A program, multiple programs, I guess. He knew everything. He was debriefed by the CIA, I guess the FBI, and he brought voluminous documents with him. He was interviewed by the U.S. media. I quoted CNN, one of their on-air people, Brent Sadler, asking him point blank, what's the real story about Saddam's weapons of mass destruction? Something to that effect. He said they absolutely were destroyed. There is nothing left. Nothing left. The New York Times wrote about it. Other major publications wrote about it. It went down the memory hole. 2003, we had a war. These same publications, CNN and the rest of them, accused Saddam of what he didn't have. We had a war. It looks like we're going into another war, full-scale war with Syria. Iran would come next. Venezuela is targeted. I've got an article I'll put out tomorrow, Larry, in the context of a full-scale intervention against Syria. I call it America's Addiction. Waging war on humanity. It sure describes what's going on.
And that is exactly what it is. It is an addiction, and it is an addiction that we better damn well break. Because that war, in and of itself, first of all, is absolutely unjust. It is absolutely unnecessary, unjust, okay? But more importantly, or just as importantly, that war is also being waged on us. Instead of mere weapons of, or phony, fake, so-called weapons of mass destruction, we, the American people in this country, are being targeted for is weapons of mass deceit. 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 And this is all we get, is the vomit of the corporate stream media, ABC, CBS, CNN, yes, PBS, Fox, all of them. They are part and parcel of doing their utmost to keep people lethargic, to keep people ignorant, to keep people in fear, and, of course, to keep people controlled. But we, I go back to what I initially said, we the people have the power. We've got to exercise it, to exercise that power. You know, I'm not very fond of everything that Thomas Jefferson did, okay? But I'll tell you one thing Thomas Jefferson said that I repeat constantly. Jefferson said, every generation needs a new revolution. And he was absolutely correct about that. People, when I quote this, oftentimes when I'm speaking or writing, people say, who said that? Did Malcolm say that? Malcolm X? No, Thomas Jefferson said that. And about that, he was correct. We need a revolution of our minds, in our minds. We need a revolution of consciousness where people understand what is at stake. And literally, quite literally, everything is at stake. Joblessness, homelessness, home foreclosures, the militarization of the police forces throughout this country, not to mention the perpetual wars and the corporate blood-sucking of these avaricious corporate bloodsuckers of people all over the world, including right here in the United States of America.
Oh, there is no country anywhere that is a more gross human rights abuser, Larry, than the United States of America. There's no question about that. And Thomas Jefferson absolutely did say that. I don't know the chronology, but in the Declaration of Independence, well, I guess he had some help writing it, but he's indicated to be the author of the Declaration of Independence, and it's right there in black and white. If a government does not fulfill, does not serve its people the way a government is supposed to serve its people, it is the duty, it is the obligation of the people of the country to replace it with another, with another government that will serve the interests of all its people. Well, that certainly is one kind of revolution. And the other kind that he spoke about was that the country changes over time. So we really need to go back and have a rewind and a reworking of our system. Because what applied a generation ago does not necessarily apply now. So we literally need to refresh and come up with a new system that addresses the current needs and do it in a responsible way. I agree with you. Jefferson has lots of flaws. Of all of the past U.S. presidents, I'm not sure who the best one was. Possibly he was. He certainly wasn't one of the founding fathers. He was ambassador to France at the time. And, right. and the most important constitutional lawyer of the time, John Adams, who was on the conservative side, much more conservative than Jefferson, he was ambassador to England, so he wasn't there either. And the U.S. Constitution was based on the Massachusetts Constitution that Adams put together, but the Constitution was put together by people. Well, I don't know why we praise these people. The history is taught incorrectly. These were people who put together a system designed for their own benefit, not for our benefit. And these people today would be called a Wall Street crowd. They were bankers, they were lawyers, they were politicians, they were merchants. I mean, they're the same kind of people that run America today. The Bill of Rights were put in for their self-interest and protection, not for us. And of course, back then, black people weren't considered people. They were considered property. They were commodities. Women didn't have the right to vote. Native Americans were being exterminated. It wasn't so pretty back then either, Larry.
That's right. But the things that we have to our advantage, you know, is, and I often quote what Brother Malcolm X said, is that of all of our research, history is the one that has the most reward. So we have that. Let's use it. Let us not repeat it. We don't have to repeat history. It's people repeating it. We can break the cycle. And I want to praise you. Thank you so much for all the work and articles that you write. Thank
Larry,
you so much.
Oh, stick with me. We have another 30 minutes. We'll take a break, short break, and we'll come right back. Welcome back. Talking with Larry Pinkney, talking about the big issues at home and abroad. Larry, we've always had lots of problems in America. I look back; it was not quite as bad when I grew up. I was born in the 1930s. I don't remember the 30s too well. The late 1930s, a little bit. Certainly the 1940s and thereafter. And I remember good things. I remember things that weren't so good. I certainly remember severe repression. Jim Crow, even in the North, Larry, Jim Crow. Just awful things that went on, and things began to change a little bit. I mean, we had civil rights, but sadly, most of the rights are lost. We had labor rights that came before I was born in the 1930s in the New Deal. Labor rights have been lost. We've seen so much. We had terrible offenses. We had nonstop wars. World War II, well, that was the big one. But wars continued after that. America literally is at war every year, either direct wars or proxy wars or multiple ones going on at the same time. Post 9/11, things got much worse. It was a state-sponsored event. There's no question about it. The evidence is so overwhelming. I've had several programs on it, Larry. In a couple of weeks or so, I'll have another program on it with a previous guest on the topic of consensus 9/11, where best evidence that's compiled and it's put out, stuff that isn't made up, stuff that's very factual. So you build a case, and at some point it becomes enough to literally be a smoking gun. I think we're heading for that. It's tough to make a case without that, but you could still make a very convincing case, and there's so much best evidence that to me it is absolutely a certainty that 9/11 was an inside job. That opened the floodgates. That opened the floodgates to police state laws in America. They began under George Bush. We had them before Bush, but they just came in rapid fire under George Bush, beginning with the Patriot Act, the Homeland Security Act, and so much more. We've got right-wing judges on the federal courts, especially the Supreme Court. Even the ones that are so-called to the left of center, they're anything other than progressives. They most certainly are not progressives, or they never would have been nominated in the first place.
Right. You could say the exact same thing about Barack Obama, and it would be accurate. You know, think about what you just said, and I'm sure you have. You know, he never would have been nominated in the first place if he were progressive. But go ahead, please.
Well, that's exactly right. Nobody gets to a high position in government, whether it's judicial, congressional, or the White House, unless they're carefully vetted, unless they're part of the system, if they don't know what the system is and that you have to go along, if they think that they're the kind of person, man or woman, black, white, Latino, anything, anybody, they have to be the right kind of person, and they have to understand the way the system is run in enough detail beyond what they might understand before they get into government. And only under those conditions are these people chosen. There is nobody who ascends to high office in America or takes an appointed position unless it's a person that is very much part of the system. Some people without much power, there are congressional people from time to time, like Cynthia McKinney, who are the real McCoy. And Cynthia has been on this program before. She'll be back again in a couple of weeks. We'll talk about the latest things that are on her mind. She was true blue. She got rousted out of Congress twice. Why? For standing up for what's right, Larry, as you know. You do that, you take on the system, you become very vulnerable. I think Cynthia was lucky they didn't kill her. They could have done that. It was easy just to get her out of office, and they did it once. She got reelected. They got her out again. I'm not certain she wants to run again for a congressional seat. If she were elected again, Larry, maybe they really would murder her. They stop at nothing to keep the power system in play. It takes more than one of us to take on the system, but it doesn't take a majority. It just takes enough committed people. But these dark forces are the ones that run America. They're waging perpetual wars. They're cracking down hard on people in America. I think we're literally on the cusp of tyranny right now with all the laws that are on the books. And we're literally heading for the full-blown thing. And if anybody thinks it can't happen here, there are so many examples in history that prove it can happen anywhere. It can happen in the most democratic country in the world. There was a time when Chile, pre-Augusto Pinochet, was considered the model democracy of the Americas, I think more a model democracy than the United States. And it just was swept away in a brutal coup d'etat. It was almost like a snap of the fingers and it was gone. Weimar Germany went the same way. Mm-hmm. It can happen in America. We're literally, it's happening right now. But the mask can come off and we can have cold, hard fascism just as brutal as a Pinochet or a Hitler. And if we don't stop it, there's a very good chance it's coming.
That's right. And you know, as you were speaking, as I was listening to you, Steve, I was reminded of this saying that goes like this. America is like a melting pot. The people at the bottom get burned and the scum floats to the top. And you see, that is precisely the case because we, ordinary, everyday people, do not control. We do not run the government. We do not control our own destinies, as we used to say in the Black Panther Party, that all power to the people. We meant just that, all power to the people. And this is something that this country that calls itself a democracy, which is in reality a hypocrisy, not a democracy, it's a big difference. And this is what we are actually dealing with. We must address this. Historically, you have just given some excellent examples of how quickly even the veneer of democracy, the veneer, I'm emphasizing that word, of democracy can be stripped away. We saw it in Boston, where the veneer of democracy was stripped away. This was a scientist in a laboratory testing to see, okay, how much can we get away with? How much can we pull on everyday people? What will they tolerate? But I go back to the founding of this country, with which obviously I have some problems with, as you referred to so correctly, with respect to black Americans, with respect to the our indigenous sisters and brothers, with respect to women. Okay, all of these people were disenfranchised. Now, having said that, however, there are some fundamental principles that have been totally, and I do mean totally, obliterated, if you will, with respect to the human rights. And you know, to be able to live unfettered by a brutal police state, to be able to live unfettered by that kind of state, that kind of situation, is a human right. Economics. The human right, when I say economics, I mean the right to have enough in order to support oneself with dignity and self-respect. That's a human right. That's not a civil right. That's a human right. And we need to understand in this country that what this struggle is about is human rights. Malcolm said that so long ago, and he was so correct. You know, this is a struggle for all of us, whether you want to call yourself a liberal or this or the progressive or even if you want to call yourself conservative, whatever you want to call yourself, there are some fundamental rights as humans that all of us are entitled to, but we're losing them. In fact, we have lost so much in such a short amount of time, particularly under drone man Barack Obama. And I keep referring to Obama because of the harm this so-called constitutional lawyer has done to people across the board. The harm. And then, of course, we have the corporate stream media, which is nothing more than the propaganda arm of this corporate government that we have. We have got to, as you said, repeating your words, Steve, we've got to strip away the mask. Take the mask off and show that the emperor truly has no clothes. And it's not just one person, it's an elite, a small elite, but a powerful elite that is blood-sucking us all. We've got to stop it.
We sure do, Larry. Do this. It was four or five years ago I wrote about the Black Panthers. Most people don't understand who the Black Panthers were, what they stood for. It was not a militant bomb-throwing organization. I remember from what I wrote, Larry, that the Panthers stood for racial emancipation, for real economic, social, and political equality across gender and color lines, and they were targeted because they believed in this. In other words, a country that really, was a nation governed by and serving everybody equally, that everybody deserved to be treated with equality. Say a few words about the Black Panther Party, because you and the party were targeted for doing the right thing, for standing up for what was right, and they wanted to mischaracterize you as something else. And they managed to end up doing quite a job. I guess Bobby Seale and Huey Newton began. They just destroyed the movement. And I'm not certain if it's coming back now. But maybe you can say a few words about the party and what's going on right now.
Yes, I will say this, and thank you for the opportunity, Brother Steve. The fact is that the Black Panther Party had a 10-point program, a very basic, simple, clear-cut, easily understood 10-point program that dealt with food, housing, the right to, the human right to food, housing, clothing, education, etc. Okay? The Black Panther, and that's a 10-point program and platform of the party. The Black Panther Party was closely allied, and this is the thing that so many people to this day, particularly in this country, do not realize. The Panther Party, the party was allied closely with organizations and people of all colors. In fact, an organization called the White Panther Party came into existence as a direct result of consultation with and working with and being in contact with the Black Panther Party. The party worked with the Young Lords. The party worked with the La Raza Unida. The party worked with SDS, which was primarily white. The party worked with, and I say worked with, I mean actively. We did things together because we understood the need that this was a common struggle. The party worked with the Brown Berets. The party worked with the Chinese Voice Party. These are all American, were all American organizations, organizations in this country, okay? Contrary to the myth, the lie that continues to live, that the Black Panther Party was racist. The Black Panther Party believed before we were annihilated, and many of us sent to prison, the Black Panther Party strongly believed and adhered to what we said as all power to the people. We didn't say all power just to these people over here or those people over there. No, we said all power to the people, and that's what we meant. J. Edgar Hoover, FBI, does that ring any bells? FBI, think about the FBI and the CIA and the NSA today in 2013. J. Edgar Hoover said the most dangerous thing about the Black Panther Party was our community programs, such as our breakfast programs, which were national programs, free breakfast programs, free shoe programs, free medical programs. There's a book that just came out, oh, maybe 8 months ago, written by a woman by the name of Alondra, that's A-L-O-N-D-R-A, Alondra Nelson, N-E-L-S-O-N. The name of the book is Body and Soul, The Black Panther Party and the Fight Against Medical Discrimination. I would urge, and it's not long, okay, it's only about 200 and some pages, maybe 300 at the most, get the book! Read Alondra's book. It's well documented. It shows what the party was doing. It shows how the party was decimated. Even in there in Chicago, I'm sure you remember this, Steve, that the brutal murder of Fred Hampton and Mark Clark. These brothers were murdered, out and out murdered. And what did the government say? What did the city of Chicago and the federal government, oh no, they shot at us. And then it came out later, okay, very much later, that no, these people had been executed. And this happened to party leaders and rank and file members of the party all over the nation. And right now in the year 2013, I would strongly suggest that what we need is a what I call a conscious people's party, conscious people's party across all lines. The Panther Party, and I'm proud to have been a veteran of the party and to have served in it, okay, but what we need today is we need to learn from the example of other organizations that went before, learn from that example, and bring ourselves together in a working, viable fashion in order to deal with this fascistic reality that we're living in or living under today. So I thank you for the opportunity to mention the Black Panther Party. And for those who, I don't want anyone to be confused. The Black Panther Party, formed in October of 1966, has nothing to do whatsoever. First of all, it was decimated, okay, by at least 20 years later, by really less than 20 years later, 10 to 15 years later, the party had been annihilated brutally, and the corporate stream media played a role in that. But the Black Panther Party event has nothing to do with what is now called the new Black Panther Party. There is no such thing as a new Black Panther Party. We have fought against racism back in the day. We have fought against economic injustice and social injustice and political injustice. We do not believe in those of us who adhere to the principles of the party. We do not believe in this, and I'm going to use the word, this vomit, this venomous vomit being spewed forth, again being spread by the corporate stream media of this little, let me just be very, very careful how I word this, of this little group calling itself the New Black Panthers. They are not New Black Panthers. They have nothing to do with the original goals, objectives, strategies, and beliefs of the party. So I don't want anyone to be confused about that. And again, we said all power to the people. I still say that. Those of us who are veterans of the party still say that, and we believe that. The party has been decimated physically, but only physically, because I believe that everybody, black, white, brown, red, and yellow, everyday people, all of us have got to become Panthers in 2013.
Larry, I came to Chicago with my family in summer 1969. I will never forget. In December, end of the year, not too far before Christmas, Fred Hampton and Mark Clark were literally shot to death by Chicago police while they slept. While they slept, the cops broke into where they were and just literally gunned them down. It was cold-blooded murder. I was absolutely shocked. I didn't realize the war going on that would really continue against the Panthers and the horrors that were done to other people. George Jackson, I guess, a couple of years later, was killed in San Quentin prison.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when they wanna decimate an organization or they wanna get rid of an individual, they'll stop at nothing to do it. And they did it in the '60s. They did it before the '60s, Larry. Things, I think, are a good deal worse today. Literally, no holds barred. Anybody they wanna target, a group, an individual, they'll come after us, Larry. And I mean, I think about this all the time. I'm not young anymore. I decided that at my age, well, you know, damn the torpedoes. I've lived 78-plus years. If they want to come after me, they know where I am. They know where they can find me. They can easily take me out, but I'm certainly not going down on my knees. I'm going down doing what I hope I won't go down, but if I do, it's going to be doing what I'm doing now.
That's right. That's right. And as Fred Hampton is known to have said, and as we all said in the party, you can kill a revolutionary, but you cannot kill the revolution. In other words, you cannot take the mind of the people. Steve Biko put it this way when he said that the most potent weapon in the hands of those who oppress us, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is what? Is the mind of the oppressed. And that's all of us, of all colors, black, white, brown, red, yellow, all of us. And this is our strength. I feel the same way, Steve. I have gone through many, many discreditation attempts by the federal government using their minions, local state minions, whatever. But you know what? That's par for the course. That's par for the course, because the struggle goes on, and we have to stay focused just like you're doing and have done for so many years, my brother. That's what we all must do. That therein lies the power of the people.
Yeah, it really does, Larry. We're just about out of time, just a minute or so left. I just want to mention to listeners, again, Larry, you and I passionately support Lynn Stewart's struggle for justice. I urge listeners to go to Lynn's website. Easy to find. Just Google Lynn Stewart, LynnSTEWART, not a D, but a T. You'll see Justice for Lynn Stewart. Access the site. There's a petition there for compassionate release. Sign the petition. Well over 10,000 people have signed it. I'm on it. Larry, you're on it. Many,
yep.
many people around the world have signed the petition. I'd like to see it mushroom to 100,000, to 200,000. If enough people say something, it gets a little resonance. It's the only chance that Lynn has. So I urge listeners to take a moment, sign the petition, support Lynn, support ourselves as well, Larry. A quick final word.
I just want to, my only final word is that we are all Lynn Stewart, all of us, I am Len Stewart. You are Len Stewart. The listeners are Len Stewart. All of us are Len Stewart. All of us. Free Len Stewart. Free all of the U.S. political prisoners in these gulags. Thank you so very, very much, my brother. It has been a delight, an honor, and a pleasure. And I end as I always end, all power to the people.
Larry, thank you so much. I look forward to having you back. You absolutely will come back. We'll continue this. And I'll remind listeners very briefly, join us again tomorrow, same time, and on Fridays, Saturdays and Sundays at this time, and on Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.